last tune we're going to do is modeled on a tune you'll recognize, all you cats out there that know the stuff. You'll recognize Silver Wedding in this tune, The Wedding Dance. You know what I'm saying?
Two, five.
So sorry to cut the klezmer, but Mitchell's here in the studio. Hi, Mitchell.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about net neutrality, among many other things. I did read your intro over the air just a few moments ago. But before we continue, I wanted you to start out by telling me about Chicago Media Action, your organization, some of your, you know, activities so far in Chicago and the media, and give us some background too about media consolidation.
Certainly. We're conflating a number of different independent though related efforts here, and I'll just go through them one by one. Chicago Media Action, the first group you had mentioned, is a group that's been around for about 12 years now, and I've been fortunate to be part of it since its beginnings in late 2002 and early 2003. The website for the group is chicagomediaaction.org. Just spell out the words. The group, Chicago Media Action, works on media, but specifically on trying to influence media in positive ways, particularly through the policy sphere, the laws, rules, regulations, court decisions sometimes, that affect media. And so that's been our main focus of effort over most of these years. But not the only one. We've supported and have supported various independent media initiatives from across Chicago and even nationally. We've been involved in various efforts for promoting and encouraging critical media inquiry, and have been something of a shining star regarding the galaxy of local critical media efforts. That's been our big area of concern that we've been working on. Net neutrality has been one of those issues that we've worked on, and we'll get into more on that in a bit. Chicago Indie Media, short for the Chicago Independent Media Center, CIMC for short. That's part of the network of independent media centers that span the globe. Launched, although there are precursors that predated, in 1999 in Seattle for the World Trade Organization protests that took place in Seattle that year. It turns out that the very first IMC was launched to cover those protests. And it proved to be a resounding success, not only in covering what the corporate media didn't and couldn't cover, but also in providing a venue for showing the potential of what people can do with a technology like the internet. And it has since grown to, you know, hundreds of venues in countries around the world. In the United States, there had been about 70 different independent media centers, and there is one in Chicago. The website for that is chicago.indymedia.org, with indie media spelled I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A. Chicago Indie Media has a number of projects under its belt, not only the website where people can post comments and stories and their own media, but also a television show that is actually celebrates its 10th anniversary this year. Chicago Independent
Congratulations.
Television.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Chicago Independent Television that airs locally in Chicago on Kane TV and also nationally on Free Speech TV. We've actually, said for the last 8 years or so, I've actually been lucky enough to have a national broadcast portal and partner. So we've been able to get on, and when I go to like national conferences, I'll get recognized, and that's pretty cool. So, yeah, that's been an effort that Chicago Indie Media has been able to continue on. If people want to see episodes, probably the most convenient place would actually be our YouTube channel, youtube.com/CIMC for the Chicago Independent Media Center. In addition, there is a radio program that Chicago Indie Media maintains called From the Trenches, which airs locally on two radio stations, and may I say other radio stations?
You can.
Okay. It airs locally both on WLUW 88.7 FM on the fourth Sunday of the month at 6 p.m. and also on WHPK, the Pride of the South Side and the South Side of Chicago outside of the University of Chicago, on Thursdays at 1:30 p.m. usually. It changes sometimes differ, but that's a pretty reliable time to listen there. Or on through our podcast. You can find us on iTunes. Just look up From the Trenches is the name of the radio program. Or through the website again, chicago.indiemedia.org. So that's been, again, kind of trying to give coverage of undercovered and uncovered stories, issues, concerns that people have had, and trying to bring new and vibrant perspectives that the corporate media, for lots of reasons that we'll hopefully get into today, won't and can't.
Yeah, I know. That's a lot. And thanks for letting us know about all the various options that people can have to get information about media consolidation and alternative media here in Chicago. And, you know, as far as mentioning other radio stations, my philosophy, I don't know if this is exactly the philosophy of the station, but we're all in this together. Yeah. All of us who are independent media producers, whether, you know, we're on the left of the dial. We have the low bandwidth. We're not clear channel. We're not commercial. So we're not in competition with anyone.
In air quotes, indeed.
Yeah, right. We're not in competition. We're here presenting a point of view. If you want to listen to some really great gospel preaching, you know you can go to the right of the dial. If you want to listen to some more, you know, hip-hoppy music, you can go to the left of the dial. We're not upset about that. But we know if you're here, you want to be here. So that's important. And whatever you do, whatever we do here, we know that what we're going to do here is going to be completely different than what you're going to hear anywhere else. So we're here for you. And we're here for you too, Mitchell. So so thanks for letting me know and letting the audience know about Chicago Indie Media and Chicago Media Action, From the Trenches, all good things. Now, the thing that's been, you know, burning me up is this idea of net neutrality. Mm-hmm. And there was a case that was decided in the D.C. Court of Appeals back in January. Do you know anything about that case? Do you want to speak to that? I would like to unpack that for our listeners because, you know, I am really confused about it. And because it's a very mixed ruling. It's sort of out there. So let's start with a little bit of background. I did read some of it, and one of the things that I think is interesting is the people who were arguing the case and who they represented and what interests are being represented. But I think let's go back a little further and talk a little bit about what net neutrality is. Mm-hmm. I know many of our listeners probably already know, and they're like, their eyes are glazing over, but I think it's important to review it. It is a kind of a technical issue that a lot of folks don't really, and when you say net neutrality, they kind of give you this puzzled look. I don't know about you, Mitchell, but whenever I talk about it, and I'm like, oh, net neutrality, and they're like, why is your hair on fire? Well, and then they're like, oh,
and now
yeah.
You've got to spend an hour-long lecture.
All right.
And then they're asleep, and it's a Sunday morning.
I know. I don't want to keep talking. I want you to talk about
it. There's a lot to unpack here, to be sure. So let's do what we can to make this as clear as possible for everyone. The idea behind network neutrality, simply put, is that those people who maintain the infrastructure, the pipelines, those that bring, the technical term is internet service providers, those that actually provide the backbone infrastructure, you name it, to get some content from WZRDChicago.org to listener X, who happens to be listening on a Sunday morning and enjoying a very lively conversation about a very important topic. That ISP, that backbone, that provider does not interfere with the content. Think about like a telephone call. If I wanted to place a phone call to someone else, the phone company is supposed to provide the service to do that. They don't interfere with me. They just basically provide the infrastructure. I push down 10 numbers, and if they're on the other end of the line, they're able to pick it up, and they're not supposed to interfere. They're just supposed to provide that common service to everyone in the society on that score. That's the principal idea behind network neutrality, but extend that to the internet. The provider that serves as the go-between between a content provider and a content consumer doesn't interfere with that content, doesn't block it, doesn't degrade it, doesn't interfere with it in other ways. That's basically and network neutrality is the formalization of that idea into government policy. And this has actually been an issue that has been percolating, even though it's gotten a lot of coverage in the past like 5 months or so, both with regards to this ruling in the D.C. Circuit back in January, and also with what the FCC did just this past Thursday on May 15th, 2014, which we'll also get to. That's a very big deal as well for lots of different reasons. We'll get to that in a bit. But it's that idea that that issue has been raging for quite a while. The issue really took off actually going back about 12 years in 2002, when then FCC Chair Michael Powell, who happens to be the son of former Secretary of State Colin Powell, and who chaired the FCC for about 6 years, I think, happened to make a decision where he basically put the internet on a very dramatic trajectory. He basically changed the internet or the way the government regulates the internet from the kind of common carriage service that you would expect with something like a telephone to and that's called formally a telecommunications service. Title II is the technical part of communications law that it affects. He changed that with the help of the majority of commissioners, Republicans at the FCC, and changed that ruling to reclassify it to Title I classification. That's formally called an information service. What that means is that you basically can treat the internet like cable TV companies treat cable TV. They have the complete control on that. They control the channels. They control what, more or less, what ordering. They control what output is being delivered back. Your option is basically either take what they give you as far as options, including payment and including whatever minimum or maximum or subsets that they provide and they craft out, or nothing. And that's basically what would be of the internet if this classification would happen. In fact, this actually happened 12 years ago and has been in place ever since. And there was actually a very vigorous attempt to try to undo that. That actually went all the way to the Supreme Court. In 2005, an internet service provider that went by the creative name Brand X actually sued the FCC. The suit went all the way to the Supreme Court and Brand X lost, meaning the FCC could basically continue on with that. That then led to a flurry of activity in 2006, including protests that I'm happy to report Chicago Media Action was a pretty big player in a series of protests when the main internet service providers, companies like Comcast and cable television, Time Warner Cable, AT&T, Verizon, the big, mostly cable and telephone providers, big companies, some of the biggest in the country, basically salivated at the opportunity to change the law so that they could enshrine this kind of cableization of the internet in their favor. And they came pretty close to actually enacting that in law in a series of legal actions in Congress in 2006 to enact that. In 2006, they actually got a legislation to their favor, what was referred to as the COPE Act, actually passed through the House. And in fact, to no small extent, by a local legislator, the First District of Illinois, Bobby Rush, it turns out, was the first Democrat and one of the lead sponsors of that legislation, it turns out. But nonetheless, I'm happy to report the effort died in the Senate. In fact, folks may remember, may have heard about the internet, especially if they hear Stephen Colbert refer to the internet or internets as a series of tubes. It turns out that series of tubes was the result of a rant that was given by a former, and he has since passed on, senator from Alaska named Ted Stevens. At the hearing that he chaired, and he was the shepherd of the legislation for the equivalent of the COPE Act in the Senate, he actually passed through laws that basically the equivalent of that in the Senate, which actually passed out of committee. But in the course of that, it turns out that he was asked a lot of uncomfortable questions, and he basically had a meltdown. Someone recorded that meltdown, and the audio of that made him infamous, and it actually made the phrase series of tubes, referring to the internet, especially in the rantings of someone who knew next to nothing about the internet and yet was the Senate's main shepherd of its policy going forward. That turned out to be, it turns out that the embarrassment that accrued from that misaction, it's the fact that someone recorded, one person, it turns out, who actually recorded it off mic, was able to get that, made it public. Huge firestorm of protest followed. The Senate actually never brought that up for a vote, and it died through inaction. And so we wound up winning that through these actions. But the actions, the Senate uproar took place only because the uproar in the public sphere took place. And that was the result of actions that those of us in Chicago Media Action and in cities across the country had all done in concert. Again, the issue of we're all in this together. We had worked together on making this an issue in 2006, and that proved to be very successful. So much so that the FCC, even though they had formally reclassified the internet to be kind of like cable, actually took actions to kind of regulate it like the kind of common carriage service that it had been. There was actually a lawsuit that was actually filed. Comcast actually got caught violating network neutrality. They degraded access to the Bible on BitTorrent. And it turns out that
the Bible.
The Bible. Oh. No, that's the thing. I mean, the activists were like saying, it's like, are you opposed to the distribution of the Bible? And they were like, and usually this is the kind of an effort, and this was a measured action that was done precisely in order to make sure that people that would be aligned more or less with the political right, religious people tend to, although it's not exclusively so. But they were like saying, look, are you opposed to the Bible? Or are you at least opposed to its distribution? Well, that's what Comcast actually blocked. And a lawsuit was actually filed with the FCC, and the FCC acted. They actually fined Comcast for a violation of net neutrality, about $7,000. Now, for a company that's like rakes in billions of dollars in profits, this is not even worth sneezing
over. That's a businessman's lunch at, you know,
exactly.
At a gentleman's club.
But they didn't pay. They actually sued the FCC saying, you can't do this. And they took it to the First Circuit Court of Appeals in D.C. and wound up winning. Actually, about a year and a half after that file was applied and the lawsuit was filed, and the net neutrality provisions that the FCC had at the time were struck down. And this was in like 2007, 2008. So the reason they were struck down, again, goes back to the issue regarding Title I versus Title II. Do you classify the internet as a kind of a principle of common carriage and non-interference with the telephone? Telephone has historically been? Or do you basically have it as a business pure and simple, like what the cable TV industry has been? They make the choices. Your choice is either to put up or shut up. You either buy what they give you or don't take it at all. But that's not really a terribly wide array of options, frankly. And people would like more options. And people have been working on that score on the cable television front as well. But that's another issue. But nonetheless, going back to the net neutrality fights in 2008 and 2009, the FCC had sued Comcast, lost. So the FCC said, okay, we need to have, Democrats are in power now. An Illinois guy named Barack Obama ran a campaign saying he supported net neutrality and would do what he did to enshrine it into law, and appointed a commissioner, a former media lobbyist by the name of Julius Genachowski, mostly with telecom ties. He had brought in, actually in 2010, said, okay, our first attempt at a net neutrality effort got struck down by the courts. Let's try again. And so they actually put through a very feeble attempt at a net neutrality law, but it actually got votes because it was better than nothing and at least had some standing of FCC support. Verizon this time actually took the mantle of the big corporate ISPs and sued the FCC. And it was now their turn to sue. And that was, the ruling was what we had in January. They actually lost. The reason they lost was not because the FCC didn't have the authority. The court acknowledged that they did. The fact was that they actually ruled under the different framework, regulating the internet as a Title I service of cable television, whereas they should, trying to do what they did under that framework was not logical, and that's why the court struck it down. But the court acknowledged that, look, if you just reclassified this as Title II under the common carriage provisions by which the internet was able to flourish, and which something like a telephone is, gives the expectation of service to all, regardless of the expectations of the user or the provider or the user. That's where they said, look, if you just reclassify this, you'll probably win your suits and you can just regulate as you like. And actually also serve the public in that regard to enshrine the principle of non-interference from these big corporate ISPs, the Verizons, the Comcast, the AT&Ts, and so forth. That's what got struck down. And that's what now the FCC has no standing policy. They have got no rule by which they can actually regulate the internet to block non-interference by these ISPs. And now that's what Tom Wheeler, now the current FCC chair, along with two commissioners, Mignon Clyburn and Jessica Rosenworcel, both enshrined, at least as far as what's formally referred to as a notice of proposed rulemaking. They've got an idea for a rule. They are now kicking off to get things started as far as whether or not to enshrine this proposed policy into law. Odds are this is going to change. And frankly, I hope it does, because it's not a good law and we can get into that in a moment. But that's what happened just this past Thursday on May 15th. And this is what has gotten practically everyone abuzz regarding what happened regarding the internet. Since so many people rely on the internet for so much, maybe 84% of all Americans use the internet in some capacity. And it is now increasingly regarded as a kind of utility, like electricity or the telephone or running water in your house. The internet has that kind of expectation now, and a good thing. But the problem is that most of the way that people get the internet is usually through a monopoly cable provider or a monopoly telephone provider. That's for the case for maybe more than 90% of Americans in the United States. And if you've got two providers providing your options to a common service or what's supposed to be a common utility service like the internet, that's an opportunity for collusion. And that's where they could control things, and that's where the opportunity there lies. So yeah, that's a lot to take in, but that's basically where we stand now.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, first thing that came to my mind as you were saying that, I was like, antitrust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, didn't we try to like break down AT&T way back when?
Yes, we did.
And weren't we trying to create more competition in the market?
I'm very glad you bring that up. And in fact, I can get into that right now. Yes, the whole reason and the whole rationale behind net neutrality is the fact that, yes, since the breakup of AT&T into a series of smaller companies and one of the most expansive antitrust actions in American history, broke up the single monopoly telephone provider into maybe like 30 different companies. But nonetheless, that didn't change the various dynamics regarding markets. The idea that concentration is inevitable within markets. There's an excellent book called Digital Disconnect by a professor actually at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, Robert McChesney, who wrote about this and has an entire chapter devoted to the interplay between markets, corporations, and a communications technology like the internet. To sum up briefly, markets tend to concentrate, especially in markets where there are big profits to be had. Chances are you're not going to see a whole lot of concentration selling hot dogs outside of outside of college football stadiums, for example. But nonetheless, for major industries like the internet and telecommunications and retail and so on, the rule is consistent. Where there is a market where there is supposed to be a diversity of opportunities and people can compete in the marketplace that competition will lead to an invisible hand that will bear good fruit. Nonetheless, there is what some scholars have called an invisible foot. the negative effects of the marketplace. And one of those negative impacts is that you find concentration, that due to attrition and due to folks being unable to compete or to buyouts or to various other reasons, the number of participants as far as those providers tends to shrink regarding the industry. There's actually an excellent book that talks about this in the course of America circa like about 100 years ago called The Incorporation of America, that actually talks about the concentration of ownership on things like railroads and telegraphy circa like 1890. So the phenomenon holds. And that's the thing about this phenomenon regarding markets is that, and this is kind of a little far afield from an issue of net neutrality, but it's
not really.
No, but I mean, that's the connection there. There's a connection there. We saw where we had seen, especially with a diverse opportunity of cable, concentration of cable providers now where, I mean, right now, right before the docket of the FCC, the number one and number two leading cable television providers are slated to merge. They have proposed a docket. There's before the FCC. We're talking about Comcast.
This is Comcast and
Time Warner Cable. Time Warner Cable. This is important to recognize, different from the main Time Warner monolith that owns, or used to own, Time Magazine and the Turner Cable channels and Warner Brothers Studios and Warner Television and the WB and all kinds of other media like that. That's a different company than Time Warner Cable. Time Warner Cable is their cable spinoff, still has the name, but a separate company, nonetheless, is the second biggest cable television provider in the United States. And Comcast wants to buy them out and has announced it so and has struck a deal to the tune of $45 billion. That is now before, or soon will be before, the FCC and the FTC regarding its potential merger. That is also up in the air. We'll have to see how that shakes out. The big factor will be how people whether or not people get involved in opposing that.
I actually think we're going to have to send some serious lawyers, guns, and money.
Lots of protests, and more than just that, you'll need a lot of people getting involved in that. But that's the thing. There is like you've got this. I mean, where maybe 30 years ago you could have had, and there used to be mom and pop cable television providers, maybe three or four in a market. They would concentrate within cable areas to the point there would be one, and then concentrated across areas so that the number of providers shrunk dramatically. In the case of a city like Chicago, we have still three cable providers, but it's divided up so that depending on where you live in the city, what providers you have depend on where you live. Where I happen to live, it's Comcast or bust. I can't get any other cable provider where I happen to live if I want cable television. It's only Comcast where I happen to live. The city is parceled out into five, city of Chicago is parceled out into five cable areas. They're numbered 1 through 5. And certain cable providers have those options, offer options in certain areas, depending on, and that's a long story regarding the history of cable television in the city of Chicago. But it basically boils down to that. The number of options you have, to a great extent, depends on where you live in the city. But the option is you don't get no more than two options, no matter where you live.
You know what? There's a lot of things there, Mitchell. One of the things that really bugs me about this is that, one, it stifles innovation. Mm-hmm. Two, you have a tiered service and you leave people out, you know, and increases the digital divide between the haves and have-nots in a big way. And then three, you know, we have a lot of what I see is, this is my perspective, that we have old technology versus new technology. You know, we have the cable providers wanting a cut of the internet service business, and they've gotten a big cut of it. And versus like the Netflix and the content providers. Mm-hmm. So we have the cable providers and we have content, and there's like they're at war, really. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting to me that the parties involved in these lawsuits are big corporations. But they're different. But they're on different sides of the internet. You know, you've got the people providing the infrastructure, mm-hmm. and then you have the people providing the content, mm-hmm. and they're at war. Mm-hmm. So, and then we're stuck in the middle, mm-hmm. and that's how I see net neutrality: is that we as consumers have to stand up between them and say, "Hey, wait a minute, guys, what about us?" Mm-hmm. what are some of, we talked about some of these adverse impacts, but just for the regular person, how is this already impacting? And we already talked about, you know, not having too many choices. Mm-hmm. We talked about how, you know, it's costing more for content. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more, I think, about how it's going to shut more people out of the internet and create problems with access and censorship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So shutting people out of the internet, to a great extent, that's been happening now, just given the kind of stratified economic situation that we find our society in at the moment. To mention an example regarding the internet, yes, I mentioned that 84% of people have some access to the internet. But the problem with that is that for most people, that is inconsistent. It's like the kind of thing where you'll be able to get Wi-Fi access if you happen to be in a McDonald's. That somehow counts as internet access. Well, yeah, and you know, you'll find people who will actually go to McDonald's to crib their internet access to be able to do homework or to apply for a job that only where job opportunities are only available through the internet, things like that. So, but yeah, that counts, but that's not terribly helpful, especially for a lot of people, and especially where this is not the case internationally. Internationally, when you look at countries around the world, the United States has been falling like a rock as far as, any metric you look at, the speed of access, the a percentage of people who have ready access, meaning it's on in your home and ready and fast, the literacy percentage of people, that's been going up a little bit. But that's only because the internet has been having so much of an impact regarding...
You're talking about internet literacy?
Yeah. Yeah. That has been going up, but that's only because of efforts, because the internet has become so much of a toehold in our society that people have kind of been, frankly, forced to learn about the internet. And so that's gone up, to its credit. But any metric you look at, speed, availability, access, cost, have been improving in every direction for the public. Cost, speed has been going up, availability has been going up, costs have been going down, competition has been going up in various other countries except here in the United States. We have now fallen, depending on the metric, depending on the you look on, anywhere from where we invented the internet some 40 years ago to now, I think, 25th internationally among metrics of speed, availability, and cost. And that's, yeah, and I mean, that alone
my
should be
my mouth is open.
Yeah,
in shock.
That's cause for outrage, or should be. And I mean, and I think the net neutrality provision here is an expression of that outrage. What, you're going to make things worse? No wonder people spoke up about this. You do raise an interesting point, though, regarding the fact that this is a kind of corporate heavyweight battle, where you've got the big corporate ISPs and then corporate providers, content providers like Google, Facebook, Twitter, Netflix, these guys who are able to bankroll lots of lobbyists and are able to make an impact. And to this issue, as much as I hate to say it, that has actually helped the issue gain the kind of public profile that it has gained in the last few years. And so, interestingly enough, you receive these disagreements. Whether or not those disagreements will last and this will continue in a way where the public can benefit remains to be seen, and that anything the public can do, and there's a lot that can be done, is critical there. And that's one thing we have to do. Going to the issue regarding getting shut out or censorship, let's talk about censorship. We saw a handful of instances in which ISPs have thrown their weight around. Republicans usually like to mention the kind of idea that we don't need to regulate for net neutrality on the internet. In fact, the two sitting Republican commissioners at the FCC, Ajit Pai and Michael O'Reilly, voted against the bad provisions of the internet because they felt like it was unnecessary. Because there's no net, because why would internet service providers not provide their access? They're going to provide that. Our internet is free and always will be. And there's no reason why we need this rule because it'll always be like this. And I think that's a very inaccurate way of looking at things. But nonetheless, it's that thinking that we actually, that's flat out wrong. And we have a number of instances where that's flat out wrong, where internet service providers have been caught violating that. We mentioned one, Comcast censoring BitTorrent for copies of the Bible.
BitTorrent relates to the packets of information that go through the internet.
It is a way for transmitting vast amounts of data through the internet. I actually work as a software developer for a living, so I can get very technical, but I'm going to avoid doing that.
It is a different way
of transmitting data when you're dealing with large sets of data, enormous files, like maybe the entirety of a 2-hour long movie. When you digitize that, that is enormous. We're talking on, you know, maybe upwards of 50 gigabytes of data or more, depending on the movie, depending on the encryption, depending on a bunch of factors, but it's big. BitTorrent is a way for you to be able to access really big files really quickly, and allow a convenient way of being able to do that. And you can do not just big files like a big movie, but also other files of sorts, like, for example, a big text file like the Bible. And that's exactly what people have done regarding BitTorrent. They've been able to use it to make available lots of other content and lots of different ways and opportunities. And one of those ways was with the Bible. And Comcast blocked BitTorrent because they didn't like the fact that they were, in Comcast's eyes, getting a free ride. The files were so big and they were using so much bandwidth, cleverly so, it turns out, but nonetheless in a way that was sizable to where Comcast was unhappy about it, that they started saying, okay, we are going to start blocking, or throttling as they called it, communications that come through BitTorrent. And so they got, caught in this. And that was the whole provision about the suit that actually led to the FCC fine, and that the Comcast then sued and actually defeated the FCC regarding their own law of network neutrality back in 2007 and 2008. Another high-profile case of internet censorship actually took place with Verizon was a culprit here. The example happened to be regarding cell phone text messages that were for national pro-choice family planning groups that actually were sending out text messages of an advocacy nature, basically telling people there's a bad law and people should contact your legislators to try to stop it. But the communications were sent via text message, and Verizon throttled those text messages, and they got caught doing so. And this actually was another example about, here's how corporate providers might throttle the access of this. Another example of censorship actually had to do with going back to the Iraq war, and actually an instance that actually happened here in Chicago. AT&T was the provider of the original stream of Lollapalooza back in maybe 2007, 2008, during the time of when the Gulf War was still raging. Pearl Jam happened to be a provider of a headline act at Lollapalooza some years back, and AT&T was the provider of that. If you know anything about Pearl Jam, and especially Eddie Vedder, their lead singer, they're pretty political. And political in a kind of left Green Party sort of way.
Oh, man.
In a kind of left party, political party sort of way. The problem here is that AT&T censored an anti-war remark that Eddie Vedder made from the stage at Lollapalooza, where everyone who was at Lollapalooza heard him, but people who were viewing the concert remotely through the internet, using AT&T, that was the provider of the stream for Lollapalooza at the time, blocked Eddie Vedder's message from reaching a wider public. AT&T got caught. It's kind of hard not to get caught at Lollapalooza with an act like that. But nonetheless, AT&T was fingered. Basically, AT&T got the equivalent of a slap on the hand. They opted not to take action about this, I think, because they didn't want to seem like they were piling on the score. But these are high-profile examples of the kind of censorship and what could be happening. And these are high-profile examples. These were able to get coverage and wider awareness. Never mind if, who knows if it turns out, like we'll mention WZRD as an example. If it turns out that a net neutrality law is not provided, and in maybe 3 or 4 years' time, the costs will eventually escalate and the technology will eventually change to the point where having a radio stream like the one that WZRD uses to be able to reach out beyond the immediate broadcast footprint of WZRD's radio signal, so that conceivably anyone in the world with a radio, with an internet connection can hear my words or DJs on WZRD. That is a very real threat. And that and where they would probably just say, well, you can, we're not going to block you. All you have to do is pay more than you can possibly afford. The equivalent about this I'm reminded of is campaign television commercials if you're running for office.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No one's stopping you from buying a $30,000 TV ad.
No.
Do you have $30,000 in the cushions of your couch? Most people don't.
Right.
And that's what I'm getting at here.
And, you know, I'm sorry, I'm kind of speechless here because we're running out of time, unfortunately. So, Mitchell, I think what we'll have to do is we'll have to continue this conversation.
Okay, certainly.
I'm not sure, you know, we'll talk later about that because this is a complex issue. And it's not only about net neutrality, but it's about access. It's about monopolies. And I was just thinking when you were mentioning the AT&T, I remember that because I was trying to get access to Lollapalooza via AT&T, right? Through the web stream, and just having a heck of a time downloading it. And, you know, and one of the other things that I've had issues with AT&T is, you know, I couldn't get the bandwidth to get a simple YouTube, and then I had to upgrade my Surface. Right. And I was thinking, but the censorship aspect, I was thinking about Citizens United. Well, if AT&T is a company that owns the wires, then they have every right to censor, you know, because they're
in
a private
their interest, right.
In their interest,
sure.
Right? And so, well, maybe they're not technically censoring as a government.
In
like,
air quotes again.
Right. But they're actually censoring using their corporate power, using their ability to cut
various
things off.
Various passive-aggressive means, but nonetheless, the effect is the same.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, anyone who watches cable TV knows that, you know, it's not really good stuff a lot of the time. Not saying that it's all bad, but just saying. Anyway, we've got to go.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we didn't get any callers, but that's okay. That doesn't mean we won't get callers in the future for our next show. But I want to thank you, Mitchell, for coming. And
You're very welcome.
Let's just mention the websites again for Chicago Media and Chicago Inda Media and your show and the show regarding independent media news, et cetera.
Chicago Media Action is online at chicagomediaaction.org. The Chicago Independent Media Center, Chicago Indie Media, is online at chicago.indiemedia.org. Has a TV show called Chicago Independent Television that airs on CAN-TV on the first and third Monday of the month at 11 p.m. There's also a YouTube channel, youtube.com/CIMC for Chicago Independent Media Center. And From the Trenches airs on both WLUW and WHPK. The website for that is also at chicago.indiemedia.org. And you can also find it on iTunes. Look up From the Trenches.
I want to thank you, Mitchell, so much for coming to WZRD and talking about this really important issue. But sadly, we have to call it our meeting to a close.
Okay.
So here's my virtual gavel. Dun, dun. And we're going to transition to our next wizard, who is an old timer here. And he's going to, speaking of censorship, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to play stuff that we can't hear anywhere else. And so let's welcome him to the board. Mitchell, thanks so much for
coming.
You're
very welcome. Thanks
okay.
for having me.
Great. But what I have to do now is I'm going to transition. So we're going to listen to some music as we move one wizard to one space on the board to another. Mm-hmm. And again, I have to thank Mitchell Szczepanczyk, right?
Szczepanczyk.
For coming. Thank you.
My website is szczz.org.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Mitchell. All right. Let's just go to some music here. But before I do, I just need to put something on.